This is Thank You Heartbreak.
Hi, everyone. I'm Chelsea Lee Trescott.
As a breakup coach, relationship advice columnist, and the founder of Break Upward, Chelsea is passionate about human beings and their stories. She talks to people about their journeys in love, growth, heartbreak, revelations, and every wound and lesson along the way.
This podcast shines a light on heartbreak, showing you that the most crushing experiences are also your greatest opportunity to become meaningful, relatable human beings. Now, let's get to the heart of it. Hi, everyone. This is Chelsea Lee Trescott, breakup coach and podcast host of Thank You Heartbreak, and this is episode 201 with Kaylin Ludvigsen. Kaylin won 20 World Cup and World Championship medals in tumbling and double mini trampoline. Then 7 years ago, while he was doing a demonstration for his students, he got into an accident, a spinal cord injury that left him paralyzed from the waist down. I was so eager to speak with Kaylin, and he did not disappoint. That said, as we come into the next 200 episodes, I'm going to try something different. I want these episodes to be about my guest. I don't want to sidetrack you with me and my story and how I relate. I'm going to start using my Instagram. I got back on it to show and reveal more of that. But as for the episodes themselves, let's see how they feel if we just go right into the conversation. So I would love for you to introduce yourself to my audience.
My name is Kaylin Ludvigsen.
I love that name, Kaylin. Where does that come from?
I have no idea. I know my mom liked Caleb, and my dad is a big country fan, and he liked Waylon.
Oh.
Because there's something here named Waylon Jennings, I believe. And so it's kind of a hybrid of Caleb and Waylon.
Good collaborative team, your parents.
Yeah. Yeah, so I have this name that nobody can ever pronounce.
I've never asked this question, actually. I mean, it seems like an obvious one, but did you derive a lot of inspiration from your parents' marriage, or not inspiration, but like clues on how to date?
Yeah, I think so. I honestly really respect my parents' relationship. They've been really good role models. They've remained married. Growing up, I really enjoyed watching them, and I think they were really good examples as far as like what a marriage is and how to work together and share responsibilities and everything like that. So I think that I really did draw from their relationship.
Mm-hmm. I'm in such awe when I talk to even the clients that I have that are trying to stay in the marriages that they have, that people, they can get into these arguments or there can be uncertainty and they don't bolt. Like, I feel like so much in dating today, people just abandon each other so easily. And yet to think that in a marriage, so many people realize that there's nowhere to go. They have to sit through this, you know? You're in a relationship, right?
Yeah, I am. So when I finished my residency in Idaho, I moved out to Ohio because he is here and he has a daughter from a previous marriage. And so it just made more sense for me to come here. And I was ready for a change and nothing was really holding me to Idaho. And so I'd been out here a few times before and I really liked the area. So I decided to come out here.
So you were long distance before?
Yeah.
No, yeah. I had a decade worth of long distance relationships. So yeah. How did you do it? Because I feel like sometimes when, at least in my experience and people that I know, that they're totally committed until the question comes up, will one of us move? And then they drop it. So how did you get to where you are now?
Honestly, once the relationship got to the point where it was serious enough for us to get to that stage of thinking about living together or being together, it was already kind of understood that I would be the one to move because he is established here with a career and he has a 10-year-old daughter and I was finishing school and there was nothing keeping me in Idaho. And mm-hmm. other than being close to my family's all still in Utah. So being closer to my family, being in Idaho was the only appeal of being in Idaho. But as far as career or anything like that, I didn't really have any prospects in Idaho. And so, like I said, I was kind of just ready for a change. And so I think it was just kind of understood, I guess, mutually between both of us that I would be coming out here.
Right. But how did you at the time when you guys were away from each other, mm-hmm. how did you stay confident about the connection and like continue to nurture this connection? I mean, a lot of people do rely on the spontaneity of being in person or yeah. just the reassurance of something physical. But I feel like with long distance, what you get really good at is kind of realizing that love is a series of conversations. At least that's my feeling. So what did you draw upon to maintain and sustain the connection that you had?
There were definitely times that were harder than others. In the year, I think I came out here 4 times for either a week or just a long weekend. And then he actually came to Utah for Thanksgiving and stayed a week. And we stayed in Salt Lake City and my family came up. So that was when he got to meet my family and we all had like kind of a big thing. And then for Christmas, I actually had 3 weeks off. So I was out here for 3 weeks. As far as talking, we would text throughout the day and then at the end of the night and stuff when I was home and everything, we would FaceTime for a few hours before bed. I don't know how people did it before.
Right.
Yeah, but like FaceTime, it was nice just to be able to see each other and just kind of connect that way. But there were stressful times and stuff that it was a lot harder not being able just to be with each other and just to be around each other. And there were times on FaceTime too where we didn't really have anything to say, but just to be able to see each other was just comforting enough.
I love that you say that it was still comforting. Sometimes in my life, I felt like if there's nothing to say, that's a bad sign. But yeah. That's fear-based. You know what I'm saying? Like that's a weakness on my end. So I love that you can say that even when there was nothing to say, just seeing each other was comforting enough.
Yeah. Like I remember there were times like I was exhausted from my day. He was exhausted from his day. And we'd come home and I'd prop my phone up and he'd prop his phone up and we would just eat dinner and just kind of like look up occasionally and stuff. So it was hard. It was a little over a year. And honestly, a decade, I don't know how that would, it's got to be tough, but.
Yeah, it definitely shaped who I am. You know, I look back and I realize it was a way of trying to overcome this increasing amount of isolation that I was dealing with in my life. Like I would be moving to one city after the next in order for different degrees. And I was so afraid of when I got to this new city where I knew no one, that I would be alone, that I thought a long distance relationship would help me kind of get comfortable as I was trying to meet people. But instead of meeting people, I just withdrew and just relied on this one voice on the end of the line.
Yeah. I could understand that, but I also could understand how having somebody there would be comforting as well. But yeah, I did the same thing. Like as far as at the point of my life when Rob and I had first got together, I just started residency. So all of my classmates who were all my friends that I knew in Idaho, we all kind of went our separate ways because people got sent to different places. So I didn't really have friends.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I've felt. Yeah.
So it was like I would literally wake up, go do my thing during the day, go to the gym, come home, and then we would sit and talk for a few hours before bed, and that was my day. So
yeah.
It was hard. Like, I can't imagine trying to be social and getting out and having a life, but then also having him at home on FaceTime, you know, like, that would be really hard.
I remember this feeling, again, I wasn't coming from, like, a healthy place with myself, but feeling, like, this guilt, like, oh my God, if I go out and I enjoy myself too much,
yeah, exactly.
What does that mean?
I do remember there were a couple of times when I had friends who were passing through or if my family came to visit and stuff and they wanted to go to dinner. The thing that was hard is we're 2 hours apart. So for me to go to dinner with somebody at 7 o'clock was 9 o'clock his time. So if I was out till 9, my time was 11 his. And so I was afraid of being out, having fun, having to go too late, coming home and missing him and having him having to go to sleep without saying goodnight or something. So I understand that. There is that guilt of sometimes of having fun without them. But yeah, I do understand that. The year was okay and it went by quickly with residency and everything. I was busy enough that it went by really quick. But if it was much longer, I don't know how it would have.
Right.
And we talked about a lot is that like if I had just started the program or something when we first started together, like I don't know, I would have had to try to transfer if I could have or something. I don't know. Because I don't know if I could have gone a whole 4 years.
Wow. So have you ever experienced this kind of love before?
No, it's weird to be with somebody. I was previously in a pretty toxic relationship, honestly, from the get-go. I knew it wasn't good, but I just thought it was one of those things. And I think going back to my parents' relationship, this is maybe the one flaw about having parents that had a long-term relationship that's been successful is that I remember them saying relationships are work and you have to work at it and all this stuff. Yeah. So I remember I was in this relationship for a long time, starting at a young age, and it was toxic and not healthy. But I just remember telling myself, like, relationships are hard. This is
right.
What you have to do. And so it's weird now being in a relationship that is healthy and having somebody that's really supportive and sweet and fun to be around and makes you feel good about yourself. It is something that I've never experienced before.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine that word work and thinking, well, if we work hard enough towards something, the toxicity will lessen.
Right.
You have to get to the other side of this.
Yeah, I do remember thinking this is a hard part of our relationship and if I just can get through this and get through this, but then it came to a point where every day it was like, you just have to get through this.
So what did that mean? Because I hear the people use that word a lot now. I mean, I think it's come out into the light, toxic relationships. What was that for you exactly?
I felt like the person I was with was really narcissistic. So I felt that all of the bad things in our relationship or all of the flaws in our relationship were always deflected onto me. And I was told things were the way that they were because I was in this, or I was this way, or anytime I had any type of concern in our relationship or wanted to communicate an issue that I was having or something, he would always just tell me that I was too sensitive or I read into things too much. So communication was really, really hard. And I learned early on in our relationship, if I ever did try to bring up something and have like a civil conversation, he got defensive, which made me defensive. And so it always became confrontational. It became this big blow up. And then I hate tension and confrontation. And so we would have a blow up and then it would be really quiet and tense. And I would still think like, well, I never got an apology for the conversation in the first place because my feelings were hurt. But then because of the tension, I would end up apologizing for making him mad for me being mad. So it was like this vicious cycle. If I ever got upset, if I tried to express it, there would be a blow up and then I would end up apologizing. So then I would just start keeping things pent up and just not good. And then I feel like you can only do that for so long until you boil, you know, to the top and then it becomes a bigger thing than it ever was. So that was hard because I just feel like I learned early on in our relationship that communication was not one of our strengths.
Going to be the answer.
Yeah, exactly. So,
wow.
So I think the toxicity really was just the, because I think communication is really important, but we weren't able to do that.
And you're so on your own with it. On your own.
Yeah, exactly.
How did you soothe in those situations? Because I can imagine, you know, one, the resentment ultimately, but also like, you know, the fear of speaking up, then the being minimized, overlooked. Everything's your fault. Like, talk about isolation. That's such an isolating experience. How do you go from like that isolating experience to still desiring intimacy from someone?
Yeah. That was tough because, especially after my accident, intimacy became a whole other issue. But it was really hard. And that was, I feel like I would isolate and kind of withdraw. And then that was another thing. If I did do that, then he would get mad at me for isolating and not being. Like communication and stuff. And so luckily I was busy enough with school and everything and I had friends, but because of that isolation, I felt like I would almost try to split between what my relationship was and with my friends. I tried to make my relationship into something that it wasn't, as I was almost embarrassed and ashamed of the relationship because I thought that I was causing these issues. And so if he ever said anything rude in front of my friends, like I would try to like laugh it off and make it into a joke or something. And so
it's kind of like self-deprecating.
Yeah, almost. And like, I'm just sitting here thinking about times, like if I was sitting with my friends at school and I had text him or something and he would respond back. And if they said like, oh, what did he say? And it was like kind of like a really short, rude-ish answer. Like I would make something up or kind of try to like soften the blows almost, if that makes sense, because I felt embarrassed because I felt like if I was honest with people about what was being said, they would say, well, why are you still with him?
Of course.
And that's what I was thinking, but I don't know if you or I'm sure your listeners too have been in relationships like that. It's so hard to leave. But once I finally did, then at the same time, I felt stupid for sticking around so long.
It's like a no-win situation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I can imagine people looking at you and being like, you have this strength that other people don't have. You have a mindset to overcome things. You know, if you can overcome so many limitations, how can a relationship be limiting for you? How can you not have the perspective and the strength to overcome that or to get out? Did you feel that pressure ever?
Yeah. And I think that's like the embarrassment I was talking about is because I think they would think that I didn't have enough self-respect or if I was just stupid enough to stay in a relationship where I was constantly being put down or minimized and things like that. And so that was the embarrassment, I would say, is just that I didn't want to appear weak or stupid or kind of like a battered spouse kind of thing. it was embarrassing. And then once I finally did leave and was more honest and like with my really close friends, like talking about things and everything, nobody ever made me feel stupid because I think they understood. It's one of those things that you have to kind of leave on your own terms and everything. But like I said, that was my biggest regret from the relationship is not getting out earlier.
When I became a coach, it wasn't like to help me really, when I became a coach for myself initially, but it wasn't to help me understand and reframe it after the fact and overcome it afterwards. It was to become someone that could leave when I knew I needed to, rather than staying too long, because I too would stay far after the point that I knew. Like, so I was just in this process of breaking my own heart for feeling like I was so weak that I would stay. So I have this question.
Okay.
In a situation where, you know, you're in a wheelchair, you're in a relationship and someone isn't, right? Like your boyfriend doesn't have an injury, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes people look at the person without the injury and they think of them as like the caretaker. Wow, like look what they're doing for someone. And I feel like no one thinks about kind of what you do as a caretaker for the other person.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering like if you could speak to that, like how you actually have your ways of caring for the person that you're in a relationship with.
That was another thing that like from my previous relationship is if I ever brought up anything that I was unhappy with or anything, he would always say back to me, "You don't know how many people tell me what a good person I am for being with you or for staying with you." And so that's just more me.
Shame.
Yeah. But now, like, being with Rob and not in a relationship like that, yeah, there are things like when I get into the car, he has to put my wheelchair in the back of the car, stuff like that. And if I can't reach something and stuff like that. So, yeah, of course, like, he does help me out. And probably he helps me more than I help him. But I always tickle his back at night. just things like that. I feel like I'm a good support for Rob because he sometimes can get overwhelmed and stressed. And so I'm kind of the one that helps calm him down. And that was a thing too. I think it's been better since I've been here, but when I was away, if he was ever stressed and everything, like I could tell when we started talking, he would be kind of flustered and short and stuff. And then he would finally say like what was bothering him. And then towards the end of the conversation, I felt like that he had calmed down and he would even tell me sometimes like, "Thank you so much for listening to me and putting up with me for my complaining and everything." If I can just be there for him emotionally to support him and everything, then I guess that's kind of my role in the relationship is kind of being the grounded and voice of reason, I guess, because he does have a tendency sometimes to get wrapped up into things quicker and kind of make things a bigger deal than they are sometimes. So
it sounds like you don't sweat the small stuff.
Yeah. And I really think that that stems from my injury because before that was not the case. I used to sweat everything. Yeah. So, but now I think like after going through what I've been through and everything, and as far as the injury and hospital and all that stuff, like you can do anything. And so like these little things that come up are not a big deal. It's not going to change things. Like they change somewhat, but I really do say that that does stem from the injury and going through what I did is, I guess, kind of a change of mindset and not letting little things get to me.
Was it a slow thing that you saw happening, or did you get to a point in your life where you looked back and you realized, wow, things don't affect me like they once did?
The first few months after my injury were a little rough.
A little? Explain it.
Just like, because before I was actually an athlete. And so like my life and my livelihood was my physical ability to do gymnastics. And so that was really what I relied on. And that was my identity, honestly. So going from training 6 hours a day to being confined to a bed for the first couple of weeks in the hospital, and then to a wheelchair and therapy and all that stuff and relearning things and all that kind of stuff. It was hard and it was a little humiliating at first, I guess, just because I guess just going from what I was doing before to what I was doing now and now trying to relearn how to open a door, and which is not easy in a wheelchair, but but I think I got to a point. So I would say like the first maybe like 3 or 4 months after my injury, I was actually in the hospital for quite a long time in a rehabilitation, like a spinal cord injury specific rehabilitation hospital in Denver.
How long?
I was there for about 4 months. I was injured in August and I was there until December.
And did people fly in? Like, did your family come out and stay there?
Yeah. So my ex was there. I was really, really lucky because this was pre-COVID, obviously, but somebody was there with me the entire time.
Yeah.
My ex was with me the majority of the time. He had to travel. He actually owned a business. And then he had to travel. But when he was gone, either my parents or my sisters, somebody was there constantly with me. So I always had somebody there, which I really think helped me, because I can't imagine. Because even though I was there for physical therapy, that was an hour of the day. And so time you're just sitting in your hospital room. If I was just there sitting alone, like, I think I could have gotten myself into a pretty dark place. But having somebody there, and the weather was still decent, so we were able to go out and there were gardens and we could taxi and go downtown and all that stuff. So really having somebody there, I think, was a really beneficial.
Wow. Yeah. And bringing you back out into the world, because otherwise you would have been just in this hospital for 4 months and thinking in a way that that was the new norm, just you in a room.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, which I remember the first time, because I think it was my sister, like, they were bored, obviously, being at the hospital. So they're like, let's go to the mall. And I was like, the mall? Like, I was so terrified. So they actually had these wheelchair accessible taxis. So you're able to stay in your wheelchair and they just kind of wheel you in and buckle in the chair and whatever. So we went, and I remember, like, that was my first time out in public. I felt more uncomfortable than anybody else did, obviously. I just remember thinking it felt so weird and everything. And now I think that really was good steps for me, because I think it would have been a lot harder to be isolated in the hospital room to all of a sudden thrown out into the world when I was discharged.
What was it like going to the mall? Because obviously you had never experienced this before. You know, so it's like this first time, it's this new reality. What were you picking up on?
Obviously, because I was so self-conscious, I was looking at everybody. So if anybody looked at me, and, like, of course, little kids are curious and don't know. And so, like, of course, I would notice kids looking. And one thing that bothered me the most was if a kid, like, was looking, you know, and just kind of like watching me go by, and the parent noticed, and the parent wouldn't acknowledge, but just grab the kid and be like, don't look, you know what I mean? Like, almost like it was a bad thing.
A bad thing to stare?
Yeah. Or almost like, don't look at him. Like, almost like being in a wheelchair was something taboo. On that same note, I remember on that same visit, we were out to the mall and we were going to eat at, I think it was a P.F. Chang's, and we were outside because we had to wait for seating. And there were a bunch of people sitting outside, and I was there with my sister and brother-in-law, and I saw this little girl that was maybe 3 or 4 years old and her mom. And, like, I looked over and saw the little girl, and she was looking at me, and I smiled and then just kind of, like, turned my head and whatever. And then all of a sudden I saw them walking towards me. And the mom came up with the little girl and she said, hi, this is Anna. And I said, hi, Anna. And then the mom said, she just has a few questions.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, what are your questions? And the little girl said, like, why are you in a wheelchair? And so, like, I told her, I said, well, I hurt my neck and there's something in your neck that if you hurt, then you're not able to move your legs. And, like, she was satisfied with that answer. And the mom said, thank you. And I'll never forget that. And, like, I really respect that. And I've only had that one experience.
Really?
That's happened. But I really respect the mom for being brave enough, because I could have been a total jerk and told her to, you know, screw off. But for having the bravery to come up and say that. But then also, I think, exposing her daughter to that I'm a person too. Even though I'm in a wheelchair, I can still talk. Because that was a thing too I noticed in the hospital. So many people, like, if I was with my parents, if we were somewhere, like if we went to a restaurant, and there was a table where they had to pull a chair out, the maitre d' or the waiter, whoever, would look at my parents and say, which chair should I move?
Mm.
Just little things like that. Like, I can speak for myself. Like, I want to sit on that corner. So
it's almost better, you're saying, that, like, people should at the very least start with addressing you and then find out if it was something you couldn't speak, then you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Or speak for myself, or even be given the opportunity to interact in a conversation. That was one thing that was hard, but I do remember my ex. I do respect him for this, though, one time. I don't remember where we were, but somebody said something like that, like, where does he want to sit or something? And he looked at the person and said, he can talk. And so they turned to me, and I could tell they felt embarrassed and stuff. But I think at first I was, maybe just because of the injury and everything was so new, like, maybe I was a little jaded and angry. So things did get to me a little bit more than they do now. Now I just kind of laugh it off and whatever. But like that first time out in public, I just remember feeling like everybody's eyes were on me and all that stuff. And I remember having a lot of fun. I was with my sister and brother-in-law, and then we went to dinner, like I said, and that mom came up with her little girl, Anna, and that was really sweet. And I really respected her doing that. And I'm sure it had to have been scary, because, like I said, you never know how people are going to act when you confront them with something like that. But I just thought that was an amazing way to bring
awareness.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Yeah, awareness for her daughter to know that even though people might look different or get around differently, like there's still people, and it's not something to be scared of. It's not contagious. It's not something wrong. So I thought that was amazing.
It is. What really hits me is the fact that it's like there was a before and after. You weren't dealing with these things before. You remember a time when someone wouldn't approach you, or you didn't have the self-consciousness of people looking. And so you can remember when no one would have looked to your parents to ask them right. something on your behalf. Mm-hmm. How is that shift of knowing, like, wait a second, like, people didn't do this to me before?
That is hard. And I've actually, even with Rob and some of my other friends, because I have friends now that never knew me before.
Yeah.
And that gets to me sometimes. I guess I don't know why. Like, I don't think former Kaylin's better than present Kaylin. I don't really know why, but I remember saying to some of my friends, like, I wish you knew me before. And I don't know if it's just because I wish they would have known before. I was always the person that was there to help people move. And you know what I mean? Like, that was just kind of my thing. And being an athlete and everything, I was always the one that was moving things for people or lifting things and really active. And I don't know, I guess that's hard that they don't know me. I don't know if it's because I missed that kind of persona that I had before, but it is tough knowing that they don't know. I guess because I remember memories and I enjoy reliving some of those things and they don't know that. And so I guess that's what is hard.
And when was that? When was the accident? How long ago?
2013. So 7 years.
7 years.
It feels like a million years, and it feels like yesterday at the same time. It's a really weird feeling.
Do you ever have dreams of yourself before?
Oh, yeah. Like, that's one thing that's really, really weird. And I've talked to a couple of other people, like, in the same condition as me, but I have never had a dream that I'm in a wheelchair. Like, I have a lot of gymnastics dreams, but all my other dreams, like, I'm always up walking and everything's normal. So I don't know. I don't know if that's just like my mind's way of kind of bringing myself back. And that was one thing too that I actually really struggled with probably the first month in the hospital was when I would sleep, I would dream and everything was normal. And then like I would kind of wake up and be like, oh, it was all just like a bad dream. And then like I would relive, you know, like waking up and getting in my wheelchair and all this stuff. So that was hard because like I would kind of have that escape of sleeping and dreaming and then being brought back.
I mean, you realize why people end up only staying in bed and sleeping and depressed and drinking, right. Yeah. You know, yeah. To shut reality off, to yeah. disengage with it. Mm-hmm. So interesting that you say that you don't believe that Kaylin before is better than the one now. Is that really true that like you don't think that what you know about life or what you see that you've been able to overcome makes you like...
That's true. I guess now, like I said, because not sweating the small stuff like I spoke about earlier, former Kaylin was selfish. And like I said, I was always sweating the small stuff. And so I think that I have definitely grown from the accident, honestly. I think learning to live with adversity has helped me mature and put things into perspective a bit more. And so I would say that mentally, I think I'm stronger now than I was before because I was so in the moment. And if anything it was a minor inconvenience to what I was doing, then it was a bigger deal than it actually was. And so I think now I definitely have better perspective as far as where things are at in life and how to deal with things. And I think that is because what I went through and being able to live with the challenges and adversity that I face now, I think's definitely contributed to that.
Mm. Wow. Seriously. I mean, when I've read stories that are similar to this, the person always makes it seem like they were just able to become this person that had this acceptance and that there was never like this struggle to accept. It seems like with you a little bit more that there was what seems very like human, the struggle to adjust.
Yeah. And I think that's definitely the case. And I don't know if because the lifestyle I had before where, like I said, being an athlete, like that's what I really depended on. Coming from that world where all of my other friends were from the gymnastics world. And I had visitors come from England, like across the US and everything.
Really? To see you?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was amazing. And I really appreciated that. But I think that did make it hard too, because every time that I had a visitor, I had to re-grieve everything because they were seeing me for the first time and I would see them grieve, and then it would like make me grieve. And
wow.
So I don't know if that was what made it hard, because coming from like an athletic background to being wheelchair bound and having such a split spectrum of lives, you know, like having this athletic life on the one side with all these people and friends, to coming to this kind of new life that I was given. I don't know if that made it harder.
Mm.
I don't know. There did just come a point where I just realized, like, no, I'm not going to do gymnastics anymore, and that's okay. And I can just pick up the pieces where I left off and go about my life in a new direction and make the best of it. And so that's kind of to the point. But I don't know if there was like, I don't know if I can give you like a specific time or something that that happened, or if I wouldn't say it was like a light switching on either. It just kind of evolved, I guess, over time.
You seem like an honest person. Be honest with me. Was this okay. Like the last conversation you wanted to have?
Oh, no. Like, I honestly, at first it was hard. It was hard. Like I was telling you, I think in the hospital, having all of those visitors, and I, because of my athletic career, I did a lot of interviews, websites, podcasts, newspapers, whatever. So I did relive it a lot, and it did become hard. And so like, I feel like in the beginning, because I was giving like so many interviews all at once and they were all the same thing, so I almost had like a script memorized. But now at this point, like, because I was actually at the gym yesterday with Rob, and I met one of his friends, and she asked me, do you mind me asking what happened? And I was like, oh no, like, you guys, you can ask me anything, because really it's not painful and it's not a hurtful memory or anything. And it's something that that happened to me, and honestly I wish it didn't, but it did. And even though my limitations and my struggles are more visible, we all have them, a physical disability or a mental illness or anything, like we all struggle. And so even though mine's more visible, I don't think that makes it any more significant.
Mm. What have you noticed about others? You know, the question, like, what happened? It must mean that people are curious. Mm. Have you noticed that people, you know, like, do people shy away from questions? So that shows you that people carry around their own discomfort about even just acknowledging maybe what you're going through. Like, what have you learned about others?
The feeling that I get from people, like I said, that mom with that little Anna girl, like, I really appreciate when people are more honest. And if you have a question, ask it. And if you're thinking something, ask it. Because I have noticed, like, there have been times with people, like if I'm meeting a new person or something, I can tell when they're uncomfortable and when they're self-conscious, and that makes me feel uncomfortable. So if people do try to shy away from things or try to pretend like they don't notice, you know, like my chair or something, like, that makes me feel more uncomfortable than having like an honest conversation and being completely open.
Do you remember people's eyes seeing you for the first time? Does anything hit you that was really emotional for you when you were in the hospital, when someone first saw?
The one that really sticks out in my mind is she's actually writing a biography about me. But I remember, so I saw her in the following March. So I was already out of the hospital at that point. Because everybody in the hospital, I think people with like my family being there, because like they would go meet them and bring them to my room and stuff, I'm sure they had a little prep session, you know, like, he's lost a lot of weight.
Yeah.
I did lose a lot of weight when I was in the hospital, but I'm sure they kind of braced them, you know, like, but this specific individual, I don't think there was that period. And by March, like, I kind of thought I was bouncing back and doing good. But I remember I came into the room, we were at a competition, and I came into the hotel room, and I came in and like, I saw her face, and she just like, her jaw dropped and she immediately started crying. And I could tell it wasn't like a, oh my God, it's you kind of cry. It was like, oh my God, what happened kind of cry. You know what I mean? So like, I gave her a hug, and I remember telling her like, it's okay.
Consoling her. Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, it was kind of funny because I was trying to make her feel better that I looked bad. And so I don't remember like specifically like right after the accident, like during that first like initial period of having a time of somebody having it like written all over their face, what they thought or anything. But like, I do remember people coming to the hospital and stuff, and I'm sure that they, oh, I do remember now that I think about it, I do remember a lot of people saying, you look a lot better than I expected. Mm. And so I think when people hear like, oh, he was in an accident and he's paralyzed, he's in the hospital, they probably think they're going to be walking into a room of somebody in a coma. I don't know. But yeah, there was nothing really sticks out in my mind initially right after, but I do remember that one specific time when I came into the room and I could tell that she was so upset because she thought I didn't look good.
I remember having someone on the podcast that had a miscarriage. They sent out an email to the whole company telling them, you know, listen, she did not have her child. And she said that, you know, people just missed the email. And so over and over, she would end up having to tell the story. And she always felt like she was having to console the other person, whether they had gone through this or they had this fear. And eventually she had to leave the company because she could not handle this feeling of having to relive it, but also having to wind up consoling, not out of malice, like the person was making it all about them, but just naturally your own fears come out.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. And circumstances, is it's very obvious and visual. But you were talking about the girl with the miscarriage, like that would be an incredibly awkward situation for the person to bring it up, totally not knowing. But
yeah,
I do like reliving it. And like you said, if I didn't want to tell the story, like I've told the story a million times, like now it's just kind of talking about the weather, you know? So it's not like it's that big a deal, but I can totally
small talk for you.
Yeah.
What does it feel like to be not exactly a stepdad, but to have that role? What has it brought into your life, this 10-year-old?
Oh, she's amazing. And one thing, like from the beginning, I wanted to be really sensitive about it. And I wanted to kind of do things on their terms, you know, because like I remember growing up and watching like The Parent Trap and stuff, and like the evil stepmother. Like I didn't want to be that person that comes in and ruins their life or anything. So, but she's an only child, and so she's very mature and speaks like an adult. And
really?
Yes. I think she's able, like, I think she has the capacity to kind of evaluate the situation, and she's been really mature about it, and she's been great. So I think to really build that relationship, like, I think it's going to take time to build a foundation and then build from there and everything. But so far, it's been great. So I've really embraced it. I never thought, honestly, that I would ever have kids or be in a situation with kids, but it's been amazing, and she's great. And so I think just if I respect her and she respects me, and so hopefully we can build a relationship from there and make it stronger. And it is a unique situation for sure.
Yeah. And it's interesting just for you, never thinking that you would have children. And then yet, based on the people that we choose to be in a relationship with, welcomes into our life.
Yeah. And I never imagine myself with kids, but I love kids. I have nieces and nephews that are about the same age. And coming from the gymnastics world, I was always involved with kids. And so I think it's been really natural for me to, I'm able to interact with kids really easily and talk about Shawn Mendes and
which I know nothing about. That's so great. I'm like the worst in that sense. I have no idea of pop culture references. What are you most looking forward to? Well, one that, like, you know, I guess the world is reopening. Do you have anything that just independently on your own or within the relationship now that you've moved there, like small moments that you're looking forward to?
One thing that I haven't been able to do because since my injury and then getting back in school and just not having time, and where I lived in Idaho was out in the middle of nowhere. So as far as getting to some place where I needed to do to be able to get my driver's licenses, because right now I'm unable to drive, so I have to have people take me places. And so that's one of my, if you want to call it, small goals off my bucket list, is to get my driver's license. And so I think like the thought of having that independence of being able to go to Starbucks if I wanted to is huge. That's my next monumental independence.
Do you know what color car you want?
Oh, I want a charcoal Porsche Cayenne.
Stop. Are you really getting the car?
That's what I want.
Oh my God. That's amazing. That is the car. I feel like if all of us could own that once in our life.
I've always wanted a charcoal Cayenne with black wheels and red leather seats.
So. Yes. I have red leather seats in my car.
Do you love it?
Yes. Every different, you know, brand has a different color red. I have an SLK and I love the red that the seats are, you know, because it's like a deeper red.
I've had brown and tan and black leather.
That's exciting.
Oh, thank you. I honestly don't even know if I can comprehend like what a life-changing step that will be, because I've been dependent on transportation for the past 7 years. But yeah, it'll be crazy.
Ability just to get up and go. And yeah, like you said, like not to rely upon people in that way. I could imagine that, and this is just my feeling, it'd be like this weird feeling of like not wanting to have too many needs, because you don't want to put someone else out, or then having to shape your needs and your demands around someone else's schedule. And to eliminate that, I mean, there really is freedom. I remember even for myself, it's like, I felt so self-conscious with all the isolation that I went through that I didn't feel like I could go out into the world. And for me, freedom became this ability to walk out into the world. And if I wanted to stop somewhere and go in, to have the security enough to just do it, to not wait on another person to be with me. So I feel like it's a similar thing to what you're saying, this freedom to be able to choose to go somewhere and feel comfortable enough. And it's on your timeline.
Yeah. And that was another thing that I think kind of helped me like learn to not sweat the small stuff too, is because where I lived in Idaho when I was doing my residency was a really small town. So I relied on friends and everything. If I needed a ride to the hospital where I was working or something, I had friends that I had arranged transportation through, which I really appreciate. But then at the same time, it gets annoying because they text me and say, hey, sorry, I have to go run this errand really quick and then I'll be there. Or if I was at the hospital and they said, oh, we're kind of slow, so you can leave early today. And
right.
So I end up sitting there for an hour anyways. So like that kind of helped me learn, like it did get frustrating, but then also like now I've kind of come to terms that it's not the biggest deal, but to think that like I could like finish my day and be able to go get in my car and go home on my own, like I would have saved hours. I can't even think of
so many hours.
Yeah. But like you were saying, like it's so hard to be in that position of like needing help and being appreciative of people helping you, but than not being frustrated about like waiting around and stuff like that.
So I coined the word break upward. I'm curious what that word might mean to you.
Break upward. For me, it just means from my life experiences that I've had, the good and the bad, taking those and interpreting them in ways that I can help myself evaluate things better and do what I need to do for myself to make myself happy and not let myself get stuck like I was before. And, I don't know, right now in my life, I feel like I'm in a really good place in relationship-wise and psychologically, emotionally, physically, I'm doing better. So from that point in time where I did have my struggles and everything, from there, I've just tried to build and regain everything that I can and build on that. And so I guess from there, I'm just going to keep trying to build in better ways and become a better person every day, I guess. Mm. I've never heard that expression before.
Yeah, I coined it. Same for me, man. Hopefully you will hear a lot of it in the future. I am curious, my last question is, because you said that you identified so much before as a gymnast and as an athlete, and then I can imagine, you know, people seeing even and thinking that you identify as someone that's in a wheelchair. What does identity mean to you now? What do you identify with, actually?
That's a tough question because I know how it is when people like a snap judgment when they see you in a wheelchair. One thing that it doesn't annoy me, but like, I guess it does annoy me, is that if I were in a group of people and like I were to leave and somebody was trying to explain to them, like I know they would say, oh, the guy in the wheelchair. That's the phrase that they would use. But I don't know. I wish people could just see past that. And that's the amazing thing with Rob is I think that he does. And I'm not ashamed of my wheelchair. Like it's what I use to get around and that's fine. But I don't know, like as far as identifying as Kaylin, I try to be a nice guy. And I try to have a good time and see the positive things in life. So I hope that people would be able, if they were to meet me and to see what I identify as, I hope they would give me enough time to see past the wheelchair and see past the injury and the former gymnastics and whatever, and just see me as me. So I don't know. That's a good question, but I wouldn't say I identify as the wheelchair guy, but I also don't want to identify as Kaylin, the former gymnast.
That's what I love about a podcast, though. You know, it's just as someone listening to your voice, right? And like, I usually never look into the guests that are coming on before. I don't like look at, you know, what they look like or anything. And when you take all those things away, you know, I mean, I remember like when I was anorexic, or my sister is a recovering addict. And both of these things, people say you always are this way. And it's easy for someone to identify you as that thing, or thinking your whole life that because I had that eating disorder for 1 year of my life, that is something that I always am or might be referred to as. And I would never want someone to think that 1 year of my life has defined the whole thing. But I also realized that there's been things that I've looked at in my life and so badly wanted to return to, thinking that was me. And so, yeah, I think what's cool about a podcast is really what you're listening to is just someone's voice. And for you, it's like, you seem like such a steady guy. And it's kind of returning to what you said, that you really offer your relationship. It's like, you know, I can't cook, for example, like Rob can open the door or something. Like, I can't cook. I can't do those things. But I know that, similar to you, that you can offer someone emotional strength or perspective, or kind of bring them back down to reality. And that's a huge thing. So I think identifying almost with the invisible qualities, to me, just takes you further, because that's something that you can always rely on and, you know, grow and really can't be taken from you. Anything that's invisible.
Awesome. I love that. Thank you.
Thank you. Tell my audience where they can find you.
I'm on Instagram. My handle is Kalon, K-A-L-O-N _ Ludvigson, L-U-V-I-G-S-O-N. It's a mouthful.
Hey, thank you so much for doing this with me. I appreciate it.
I had a lot of fun, and hopefully I didn't ramble too much.
Not at all. Not at all.
If this episode resonated with you, it would mean the absolute world if you could pass it on and let other people know about it. How you can support this podcast is really just sharing it, telling people about it. If you know someone that's hurting in their heart, tell them about Thank You Heartbreak. And if you want to be a guest on Thank You Heartbreak, reach out to me. You can find me on Instagram at Thank You Heartbreak, or you can email me directly at Chelsea, C-H-E-L-S-E-A, at BreakUpWord, BreakUpWord.com. And if you're interested in one-on-one coaching sessions, you can visit my website, breakupward.com/shop, where you can check out directly from my site. It's a super, 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 super simple process. Of course, I will answer any of your questions before you book. And again, you can email me at chelsea@breakupward.com. There's many different coaching options. And I would love to show up for you as you begin to show up in more wise and clarifying and secure ways for yourself. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be right back.